This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And that is hammered. Oh, my.
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far, I'd have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
High drive. Left field.
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it?
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 33 of The Roundtable. I am Grant Brisby. I'm here with Andy McCullough and Mark Carrig. We've got a full boat here, gentlemen, for the first time in about a month, so I guess we got to catch Mark up. Mark, Astros won the World Series.
They did what?
Yeah,
they did.
I think that's all I got.
They beat the Yankees. Can you believe that? The unbeatable Yankees. Remember how good they were in the summer?
That was wild. How are you guys doing? Mark, I'll start with you. Mark, how you doing?
Oh, we're doing fine. Just glad to be back here on the program. With you and the glue guy.
Mark, do not take a big sip of your coffee mug that says James Click deserves a multi-year contract.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
They didn't extend him? Did the Braves extend him?
Alex Anthopoulos signed him to a 15-year deal. Man, good for the Clickster. James Click stood up for himself, walked away from a situation where he was clearly disrespected. He earned the respect of his peers. That's certainly for sure. That at the GM meetings, it was a pretty consistent drumbeat of people being irritated on James Click's behalf. He handled himself with dignity, and he'll probably be running a team again, if not, you know, next year, no, but in the future. And hey, he won a World Series. No one's ever going to take that away from him. That's an impressive feat.
I would say that is – I don't want to speak for James Click. I just think that seems like the dream, to win the World Series and then have a gap year before everyone is knocking at your door. Because GMs are just a wild – it's a bananas job. I could never do it. You just have to be a shell of yourself as you go through and devote your life to the profession. Take a gap year. You know, see what's good. Go see some museums. I think it's perfect.
The counter would be income, and that we live in a capitalist society that requires, you know, money for goods and services. But a gap year sounds fun too.
He's like one of the not original baseball prospectus guys, but a baseball prospectus ventures guy. So he's probably got a real sweet nest egg from all that baseball prospectus money.
the BP fortune.
He's an heir to old the BP money. Fortune.
Oh, yeah, old money. Yeah. Like, you know, this is, we're going to be at the winter meetings not too long from now. And we were talking about it before coming on. And, you know, every year you get all these hopefuls that mingle in the lobby. They want so badly to work in this sport. And the James Click thing is a reminder, man, this sport's brutal.
Yeah.
It's rough. Yeah. He won a World Series. And, you know, he's out of a job right now, unless like he's already caught on to his, you know, surely waiting special assistantship somewhere, you know, also known as GM gap year, as you say.
Yeah. I mean, Alex Anthopoulos is the model for that, actually. You know, he chose to resign after the Blue Jays installed Mark Shapiro ahead of him. Is it Shapiro or Shapiro? I actually never. There's anyway, whatever. That guy, Mark, they put him above him as the president, and Anthopoulos, you know, resigned. And then he took a few years to work in the Dodgers organization, which he described as like executive grad school, and then went and is, you know, helped continue to turn the Braves back into a juggernaut. So, yeah, I mean, I think like it is a brutal business. And I think that was something at the GM meetings that a lot of guys were sort of, you know, kind of grousing about, because like, I don't know, Will Sandman and I are working on kind of a story about this for next week, just about like executive burnout, right? Like it's a job that like it requires like a lot in order to do it well. Also, like as Don Draper once said, that's what the money's for, you know? So like, it's kind of a hard thing to like grouse about, but it is something that I think, you know, privately execs talk about, of just like work-life balance, you know, like what are we exactly doing this for? You know, James Click won the World Series, doesn't even get a multi-year deal. David Stearns, you know, stepped down, kind of citing just like a bit of a burnout, you know, that sort of thing. So I don't know. It's a more persistent drumbeat, I found, among the executive class than in other years, if that makes sense.
I can't imagine that the job's ever been harder. That's what it is now.
That's what some guys were sort of saying is, I think it's always been a hard job. Right. Like, it's always been really hard. It's also an extremely privileged job, to be clear. Right. Like, there's you get paid a ton of money. You know, you get to do really cool stuff, you know. But yeah, I mean, the scrutiny is hard. The decision making has become really narrow in a way. There's a lot of jump balls, you know, it seems like a lot of like 52-48 type decisions that can really grind on you. I think the money's for, and there's always going to be someone waiting in the wings, you know, ready to do it. But this idea, the way I think it was Peter Bendix, the younger GM for the Rays, put it to me, is like, no one who has this job, the job is not what you envisioned it being when you got started in baseball, you know, for better or for worse. Like, there's certain things about it that are better, but it's not like, you know, a rip-roaring good time.
Yeah, would you think that it's possible that the ownership class is now viewing GMs as more interchangeable than they used to be? Like, it got to a point where veterans on the free agent market were devalued because all the GMs said, well, you know, we can replicate this production. We figured out how to stretch this from this kind of free agent and that. Are owners looking at GMs and like, I found this James Click, I'll just find the next James Click? Is there like an arrogance that comes along with that?
Is there an arrogance among the ownership class?
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't want to break news here on this podcast, but
I mean, too, it just depends. I mean, it just depends. I don't know. I think the Click situation, I think, is pretty different from some of the other situations, because there's a lot of ways that Jim Crane could have handled this that would have made it less of a black eye on the organization. You know, as I often say on this podcast, you know, as Joel Sherman said first, I believe, you know, if you theoretically wanted to move on from James Click because for whatever reason you felt like there was, you know, you needed a different voice or you didn't agree with him philosophically, you could have offered him a multi-year deal with the sort of tacit understanding of like, look, you know, I might let you go after year one of this or whatever. And you just kind of eat it. But Crane made a point of doing the 1 year deal, which was such a sort of brazen, you know, sort of act of disrespect that it's hard to foresee most of the other owners engaging in that. You know, for example, Dave Dombrowski lost the World Series and he just got a 3 year contract, you know, right. From Brian Cashman lost to James Click's Astros as well. And he's, you know, I don't even know if he has a who knows, but I assume Cashman will get a multi-year deal. He's been just like an employee at will all offseason. But
he's got that Tim Wakefield contract where like every year he just opts back in.
Well,
a 100-year contract.
Anyway, we're far afield already, but whatever.
I think what we're seeing here is a couple different things. The first one is, you know, we're talking about how difficult the GM job is. Well, part of that difficulty is managing up. Mm-hmm. Your relationship with the owner is massive. You know, how you guys learn how to work together, the push and pull that's inherent in that kind of job, that's all very, you know, human level stuff. And because it's human level stuff, you know, you're talking about, is this like a trend, right, Grant? Like, is it our owners? And Andy said it, man. I think it's dependent on the owner. Like, all of these guys handle their business differently. And, you know, I think it's, you know, part of the reason why a lot of the folks that run teams look the same, because the owners look the same. And therefore, you know, this is what you sort of like gravitate toward. It's sort of like, you know, in baseball, a thing that happens kind of everywhere. Right. So I think that's one aspect of it. I think the other part of this thing, when you talk about burnout, Andy, is that just in the time that we've covered the sport, how much bigger have these front offices gotten? how much more complicated have they gotten? How many more stakeholders do you have to get to buy in? You know, I was talking to Chaim Bloom not long after he got the Red Sox job, and the conversation turned into, you know, thoughts on leadership. And I thought that was interesting. So much of how he frames it is just like, you know, are you empowering people? You know, are you getting them to work together? Are you getting to pull on, like, all the cliches? Mm-hmm. But I mean, when you really think about it, and you're dealing with human beings that have their own aspirations, that have their own visions, to try to get them all in one place, going in one direction, is an incredibly difficult job. And I think a lot of folks that watch the sport are looking at GMs, and they're focused on one tiny element of it, which is the roster building.
Yeah, transactional.
Oh, I can be a GM. I can, you know, anyone can see that they need a left fielder. And it's like, no. And when Peter Bendix, I've known for a long time, right? Peter's a really thoughtful guy. I think that's an interesting thing that he said about it. It's not the job you think it's going to be. I think most fans see this as we're going to go in and fix the roster. And what really the GM is like dealing with all these people mm-hmm. that are in charge of helping you build that roster. And that is an extremely complicated, emotionally draining. And then, by the way, you also got to manage upward. I mean, it's a brutal job.
Yeah.
If I took over a team, the first thing I would do is I would send an email out at midnight and ask my employees to simply be more hardcore. I think I'm hearing what you're saying, and that's where I would go with it.
Oh my God. Sleep in the office.
Yeah.
Sleep in the office.
Sleeping bags in. Get hardcore. Yeah.
Right.
How's that working out?
Right.
Good? Yeah. Yeah. All right. I guess we should focus or move on to some off-season stuff. First off, Andy, are you drinking coffee out of a wine tumbler,
or are you just yeah, that's what I drink my coffee out of.
Are you just rip roaring at noon?
I wish I was just getting trashed right now on the pod, but no, man. No, I'm just drinking coffee. Yeah, is this a wine? I guess this is a wine glass.
Okay. No, we'll save the trashed roundtable for the winter meetings. We will just go in.
That would be fun. Yeah, that would be fun. I was trying to make a joke about James Click like making trades on Instagram, but that just didn't work. I was trying to figure that out, you know, like, but I couldn't do it. I can't figure out the going from. I just want to say,
please
briefly. Twitter has at various times been a very fulfilling social media thing. We can't start breaking news on Instagram. That is, as Jose Altuve once said, it is a website for pictures, nice pictures, where you look at pictures. Okay. I can't. I'm not going to have to get an Instagram account so that I can see the news. I will just read it on the news sites, I think.
I don't care about being first. I'll just let it trickle down to me at some point.
And the fact that you can't even – I found out you can't post links in Instagram. You have to like put it in your bio, so you can't put up a post that has a link in it. What are we doing? Like, let's just give away the news completely for free. Like, with no benefit to our company.
You don't even get that 5% click.
You don't even get you don't even get the 100 people who actually click through your story to read it. Like, it's just, here's a nice picture of a person who signed.
I started to work Instagram for like literally one reason. And that's the reason. Right there. Just to use that pic. Because like, how perfect is that? It's like, man, like this sucks.
Yeah. For our audio listeners, this is Mark holding up a picture of Andy McCullough in some sort of distress.
Yeah.
Yes. On this podcast, as a matter of fact.
I might start a work Instagram to just post book stuff, to just be a book hype guy. But that's just my personal life. That's not, you know. Anyway, that's all. We can move on. What are we doing?
Yeah, no, I am. I did like a McCovey Chronicles Instagram for like 2 hours, and that was 7 years ago. I have planted my flag in my personal boomerism with Instagram. I refuse to figure out how it works. I refuse to sign up and be active. I tried to do a story once and I couldn't figure it out, and that's it. Nope, done. I am an old man who gets on Twitter and rails about capitalism.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like that is my niche. I am the prototypical Twitter user.
It was awesome the other night when everyone was like, I think Twitter's gonna break like at any moment, and then everyone just woke up and it's still working. Like, I don't know. It might break. It could be breaking right now. But like,
it's breaking slow. It's deteriorating in subtle ways.
We're never going to be allowed to leave.
What's the over under you think on the last McCovey Chronicles Instagram post? What date would you give this, Grant?
See, I don't know if I gave the keys to the new people when they took over the site. But if I didn't give the keys, I'm going to say I was trying to be a good soldier in like 2014 or 2015 or something.
2016 is the answer. And here's a picture of you flipping off a Jeff Sullivan tweet. That's good content.
That is.
Wow, I should have kept that up. Yeah.
That is.
I'd be an influencer.
And here's
now.
A Bruce Bochy gnome. That's good. This is some good. I can't believe you didn't keep this going. I think that's the point.
I get it. Because he's got a
tiny little hat.
He's got a big head.
Right. Because Bochy has a big head. So
it's also just terrifying in general, more than big head. But yeah, I don't know. I just say that's my old man stuff. But I got, all right.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Let's stop looking at our belly buttons and let us do some hot stove content. How hot would you say the stove is on a scale of the stove's off to youch my hand? It's kind of like you're just getting the water boiling right now.
Yeah, right? It feels like a normal stove. Like it's heating up, right? Like I think last year at this time there was more of a frenzy because the lockout was coming. I think this year with no artificial end date, which by the way the owners did, which no artificial sort of shutdown coming.
You're only going to hear that on this.
We're the only the ones who will point out that the owner initiated lockout. Without that, I mean, teams are free to kind of take their time. And so, you know, you hear the standard, like Aaron Judge says he'd like to get this over sooner rather than later. So his new team or current team or whichever team he signs with can, do other stuff this winter. And it's like, yeah, okay. You know, it'll also probably be whoever offers the most money. I mean, or whatever, maybe not, who knows. But I think things are going to play out at a relatively straightforward pace. I do not think we will find ourselves in a situation like 2018 going into 2019 where Machado and Harper signed so late. I think that sort of mini era of, fake austerity has passed. I think enough teams have sort of, reset themselves luxury tax wise or figured out luxury tax wise that they're not, handcuffing themselves for, no reason. So there's enough teams in the water. Cody Bellinger being a free agent makes the center field market a little more interesting. It'll be fun to watch, Scott Boras play him and Brandon Nimmo together. There's a lot to – it's the usual, right? Justin Verlander's out there, Jacob deGrom, lots of good players. They're all talking to the teams with lots of money. And it's just kind of a waiting game to see who's going to jump and then the dominoes start to go. Right, Mark?
That's pretty typical.
Yeah.
I mean, I think last year was such an anomaly because, like you said, the lockout created that weird frenzy.
Yeah.
I hope we don't see that Manny Machado, Bryce Harper thing. I thought that was terrible. Waiting until March, like, my goodness, that, I don't know. It's kind of a drag. I think I'm always tempted by folks. I think Billy Epler said this recently just about that. Why can't it just be like the NBA, like the frenzy, the short window, right? Like where it all gets done quickly. Can't ever see it happening here, but like, man, it would be fun. But anyway.
Yeah. It'd be interesting if it was like the NBA. I'm trying to think what the NBA has that baseball.
Right. Yes.
I'm just trying to. Oh, there's like a thing. There's like two words for it.
Revenue sharing.
One now, it would be a cap.
What? Yeah, that's what it is.
No, revenue sharing.
A cap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's weird that they are able to create this frenzy because it's like they can only offer. So weird. I don't know. Anyway.
He ain't the glue guy for nothing, Grant.
Here's the thing. I actually want to do the research because right now Andy's got on his video screen, his little title is glue guy. And I want to run the numbers because I think I want to do that meme, you know, Tom Hanks movie where, you know, the piracy. And I was like, hey, look at me. I'm the glue now. Like, that's what I think. Oh. I'm the glue.
I
am the Captain.
Captain Phillips. Yes. There you go.
What a great scene that is. Like, I was just saying that to someone the other day, how awesome that scene is because everybody knows that reference. Everybody. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's a great.
The ending of that movie is crazy, right? When he acts out the post-traumatic stress, that's some good acting by that Tom Cruise.
I don't watch movies. I just experience Hollywood through memes. So there you go. That's one of my favorite all-time movies, though. I've only seen the meme, but that meme is fantastic.
Fantastic.
So name a free agent. Just either one of you, just give me one name, and I let me tell you my thoughts. I've got my ear on the ground, and I've been hearing a lot of rumors. So give me one name.
Where's Aaron Judge going?
Yeah, where's Aaron Judge
Giants
going?
Or Rangers? All right, another name.
Where's Jacob DeGrom going?
Giants or Rangers? Another name.
Justin Verlander.
Giants or Rangers are interested. Like, it just feels like are some seasons where it's like Blue Jays, Mets. This is the Giants Rangers offseason to be linked to everyone. So I don't know. I don't know where anyone's going. I think, but it's weird to me that the Rangers are seemingly just still after it. Like, I don't. Well, it's not like Marcus Semien and Corey Seager were disasters. I don't think it worked out as well as they thought it might, but they're doubling down on that idea, maybe?
I think when you invest $500 million in two guys, right, you got to keep going. I mean, they built that huge stadium, which, you know, aesthetically is what it is, but it's a new ballpark and there's a whole infrastructure around it that, you know, you'd like to get people in. They've made a big investment in that. They're talking up their farm system and you gotta kind of keep pushing. I mean, I think you can't stop with just the two guys. But it's, yeah, I mean, you're right. This is the sort of off season where, like, anytime there's a player out there, you're like, you know where he would fit? Is the Rangers, like, pretty much, you know, besides the shortstops, right, since they signed two last year. But, like, yeah, they're definitely, I think they're not favorites, but I think Jacob DeGrom will sign there, if only because I think they might be the team willing to go 5 years. I mean, yeah, right, but, like, if you're going nuts, right,
yeah,
the sensible offer is like two, right? The offer it's going to take is at least three. The one that it will actually be is four. And then, you know, who's willing to go five? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I actually didn't think about this because I always thought that DeGrom would be like Carlos Rodon, but more so, where he would do a one-year deal with the player options. So, like, a one-year deal for $30 million with a player option at $30 million. He gets hurt. It's a one-year $60 million deal in some respects. But he might be the guy that doesn't necessarily want to get out on the market again next year because there's no – he's just as risky as Rodon in a different way. But maybe that getting that 5 years right now, that's going to be good for him.
Man, I hate to be the Texas Rangers right now. They're stuck, right? They have to move forward. Mm-hmm. They have to. And it's not like – I think the issue is that what they're looking for, which is that top-end pitching, obviously there's not that many of those guys sitting out there. And the ones that are, they've got some kind of question mark attached to them. Mm-hmm. So, like, what do you do, right? Like, there's not a – you know, we talk about, is this a good contract? Well, you're going to take a lot of risk with any of those people. Mm-hmm. But, like, if you're the Rangers, like Andy said, man, they went crazy last winter. Like, you can't stop now. And, like, you've got this brand new ballpark in which it seems like every team in baseball is making memories there except for yours. Right? Like, I mean, Levi Weaver wrote a clever thing about how, you know, there's a World Series that's been played there, did not include the Texas Rangers. There, you know, Aaron Judge hit his historic home run there, does not play for the Texas Rangers. There's going to be an All-Star game there they just announced very soon. So, like, all these, like, big ticket, like, cool things have happened on their field, and none of them have to do with the Texas Rangers. And so at some point, you know, like when they spent like that last December, I think it was actually right before the shutdown, I want to say, mm-hmm. You know, that kind of like was a signal right there, right? Like that you can't, if it doesn't work this time, then you've got to keep going. And with them, it means pitching. I kind of wonder what happens though. Like if, I mean, given all the risk involved with some of these names we're talking about, let's say they come out and they don't get that pitching. What do?
Right?
Like, do you go and like, you get another outfielder and like, just, you know, like go crazy there? Like, what do? It's like, it feels like a really difficult spot for them. And you know, the Astros aren't going away in that division either. Right? Like, so you're going to have to compete against the juggernaut. Yeah. I mean, it's tough. Like, it's interesting, but it feels like there's not like a lot of like decisions there that don't involve a ton of risk.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the three big pitchers, right? You got DeGrom, who's thrown 150 innings in the past 2 years. You got Rodon, who was like non-tendered 2 years ago, which, mm-hmm. you know, maybe is a financial decision, but still the fact that it was even considered, right? And Justin Verlander, who like just had a dead man's ligament put in his elbow, you know, like, or whatever it was. Maybe it came from his thigh, but as Adam Kilgore once said, you know, about Steven Strasburg, the reason he got shut down is he has a dead man's ligament in his right arm. I love that line.
Get the cadaver power.
No, I mean, like, whatever. He has his elbow was surgically reconstructed relatively recently, and he's 39 years old. Like, mm-hmm. do you feel good about any of those guys on a long-term basis? I mean, it's pitching, right? So it's so risky. I mean, it, you know, Mark, what you're saying about Texas, right? Like, brings up the concept, you know, of optionality. Right, which is something that Andrew Friedman and the various Tampa Bay diaspora talks about a lot. This concept, you know, Stu Sternberg really brought into that organization, and it's, you know, not it's used elsewhere, but they're the ones who kind of maybe espouse it the most often. And it's the idea of basically being able to do anything, but not being forced to do something, never being in a position where you have to do something. And, you know, like, the Rangers kind of got to keep going, right? But maybe if they mm-hmm. don't sign one of those pitchers, they will be happy that they made that move per se. But also, like, if you don't sign one of those pitchers and you lose 85 games again or whatever, like, it's hard to be like, oh, great job, guys, we did it. You know, like, what a success. And that's one of the hard parts of, you know, trying to rebuild when you've got a juggernaut in their division.
I think it's when you are talking about this potential for the Rangers, if they can't get a pitcher, if they sign some outfielders, they get some more help for the lineup, and then they turn into this lineup heavy team. That appeals to me as a guy who like got into baseball in the late 90s. And my image of the Rangers is always going to be just in 1999, yeah. They won 95 games.
Yeah.
And they had their lowest ERA in the rotation was Aaron Seeley with 4.7.
That's right.
They had John Burkett, 5.62 ERA. Mike Morgan, almost 40, 6.24. Mark Clark made 15 starts. His ERA was 8.60. That team won 95 games, and it was funny as hell, and I think they should do it again.
Was that Juan Gonzalez and Pudge and all them?
Yeah, I mean, that right? would
be... I mean, Juan Gonzalez was crazy good, I feel like, in 99. Without looking at the numbers, that had to be, like, one of his better years.
He was 332 with 35 homers, Palmeiro, Rusty Greer. Royce Clayton has a 800 OPS for that team. Like, that team was freaking amazing, but they
raked.
Yeah. Well, do it again.
Mitch Garver slugged 404. This past year, so
is that good?
I mean, is it? I think it is, isn't it? I actually don't know. Good? What is good anyway? What's a good slugging percentage now?
What's the league average? Is what 4.40? Well, I'm gonna look it up because I'm a professional. League average slugging is 3.95.
All right, so that's above.
Holy average. Cow!
4.20, 4.30.
Now he did. Yeah, he did have a 2.98.
That's MLB wide. It's a 2.43 average. Yeah. 243 batting average, 312 on base percentage, 395 slugging percentage. Those are the averages for the 2022 Major League Baseball universe.
Learn something new every day.
Wow.
Put that in your pipe.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think. There are some players, it feels like with the ball, I don't know if it's the ball that's changing, I don't know if it's the dead ball or whatever. I haven't been caught up on that discourse, but I was looking at Jesse Winker the other day as mm-hmm. is, you know, are the Mariners going to trade him? And it just seems like there's this class of player who lost all their power at once. And he's one of them. The Giants had a couple of them. Different Brandons had a power outage like that. And it just seems like if there was a change to the ball, maybe it affected some players more than others. I don't know. I'm just glad I'm not a GM for several reasons we've talked about.
I don't know. I mean, like when Alan Craig stopped hitting, I don't know if people like blamed anyone besides, you know, like Alan Craig. And that's not to rip Alan Craig. You know, I'm just coming up with like a guy who like was a really, you know, top flight hitter and then stopped being one. Like, I don't know. Part of the thing that I get sort of annoyed with the ball discourse is it just sort of makes it so like when players stop performing, like, oh, we have an explanation. It's like the ball's different. It's like, well, Mike Trout's still really good. You know, like, again, I saw Anthony Rendon hit a left-handed homer. Like, it's the ball is perfectly fine. So I don't know. I mean, I do think that the rule changes will have a little bit of effect, at least in the fact that every left-handed hitter, you know, is convinced they're going to hit 400 now with the shift being banned. But I don't know. The ball discourse, like, I'm sure in April there will be batted ball data that suggests that there's drag on the ball, and then in May that there will be batted ball data that suggests that actually it's back to normal, and everyone will forget that it's colder in May than it is in April or whatever. You know what I'm saying? I'm over the balls, man.
But I got to go back. Did this MF just drop an Alan Craig reference?
Yeah.
Are we talking about Alan Craig on the round table?
Well, that was because I couldn't remember. Who was the guy who was on the Cardinals and then got traded to the Padres and wasn't good in like 2008. I'm going to look it up. This is good pod.
I'm thinking like Jeremy Giambi, but that's not Padre. I got
Ryan Ludwig.
Oh, that's how they had to get rid of Corey Kluber. They got rid of Corey Kluber in that trade. And Ludwig was not good. 2010. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn. It's a game of remember them guys. Remember
some guys is broken down. Pretty good in 2012. Anyway, wow. That's just, I don't know. It just used to be like guys could just stop being good hitters. And there wasn't like some conspiracy behind it. It was just like, oh, baseball's actually really hard.
It's super true. Like I see where you're going, and I maybe withdraw a little bit. But Jesse Winker, he's 28. Like, where does power go? I know he's a big dude. I don't know. Baseball's hard. I certainly wouldn't want to be a baseball GM. I wouldn't want to analyze the sport for a living. So I think that's the takeaway
here. Hey, I wanted to. I was curious what you guys thought about this. So Ken Rosenthal had a very interesting column, I guess it was last week, talking about the Dodgers and the Yankees and the idea of basically taking a sort of like financial step back. Like if you're the Yankees, right, you sign Rizzo, you sign Aaron Judge, and then you just sort of play the kids, play Cabrera, Peraza, you know, clear the deck for Volpe, figure out what you've got, you know, with some of those guys. The Dodgers have been talking up their, you know, their fleet of youngsters, all their prospects, like, you know, they're not going to spend a ton maybe because, you know, they've got to find a room for this guy and that guy. And, you know, we want to find out if this guy's a member of the rotation, if this guy can play third base every day, blah, blah, blah. And I guess what I wonder is like, I listen to that and I'm like, well, you know, they're good enough now to win enough games to make the playoffs, right? Is it bad for me to think like maybe this isn't a bad idea? Am I being anti-labor if I lean in? Like, I don't know. Like, help me out here.
So as soon as you started saying that, right, like I'm thinking about sort of the shorthand for this idea, which is run it back.
Mm.
And it's happened a lot. I'm hearing it a lot in New York, right, with the Yankees. Oh, they're just going to run it back. Mm-hmm. They're just going to run it back. And it's not like a positive connotation.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Which I understand, right? When you watch your team swing and miss like that against Houston and like it seems like that team is built to just beat your ass. Like if you're a Yankee fan, I totally get the idea that you'd be repulsed by the idea of running it back, mm-hmm. which signing, you know, Rizzo and Judge would be running it back. They won 99 baseball games this year. They won 99 games. And so it's like, you know, with a 200 plus 240 run differential, by the way. Like, I mean, so – yeah, like there's a part of me that it's like, okay, I mean, there could be worse things than running it back when you've got a 99 win baseball team on hand. that, you know, where it wasn't like a function of luck as evidenced by the 240 plus run differential. I don't know. I mean, so yeah, like it's, I think it's an interesting thought. I also think that like, it's the last thing that any fan wants to hear. Yeah. I totally get it. Okay. And it's the last thing certainly any agent wants to hear. Sure. And I totally get it. But I mean, yeah, like when you're that good, right? The Dodgers certainly fit the bill. Like, you know, some of this is like, you know, they got unlucky in the playoffs, man. I mean,
well, they didn't play well in the playoffs.
Right. Okay. Right. Like, and, but you know, whether, and we talked about this, like, you know, 6 weeks ago or the last time I was here before my kids got sick, you know, like some of that is, yeah, whether you, the timing of when you are playing well is so much a function of just straight sure. up luck.
For me, right? If you look at those two, so I think the two teams are different in that for the Dodgers, you can argue, okay, they should go and get a number one starter in some form or fashion. Maybe that's a free agent. It might make more sense to try and, you know, convince the Brewers to part with Corbin Burns or something like that. Okay, yeah, they could use a number one. But the real solution for the Dodgers is play better. That's it. Just play better. They have enough, play better. With the Yankees, there's a significant enough gap between them and the Astros right. that you can wonder, like, okay, what are they doing? So it's sort of, okay, well, let's think about what the problem are. Well, you need a little bit more contact. You need to get a little bit more left-handed. Pitching, pretty much fine. Pitching is as good as anyone, maybe not as good as the Astros, but pretty darn close. So it's like those are marginal things. Now, you could just say like, well, actually, they should sign Carlos Correa. Okay, yeah, that Carlos Correa makes him better. But I the idea of running it back and figuring out a little bit about the younger guys and creating a lane for them, it has some appeal. I don't know. Maybe they should just sign Correa. I don't know. They're the Yankees. They can afford it. Right?
Right.
I don't know. I don't know what the
right – No, but I get what you're saying about that appeal to it for sure, yeah. Right? Because, like, in the Yankees' case, there are some, like, young, exciting players that I feel like would warrant a look. So I totally get it from that standpoint, right? Like, and to their credit, like, they have that option in play. And they have had years where they did not, mm-hmm. many years where they did not. Well, they've got a choice to make, I guess, so, you know, allegedly. And so, yeah, I get the appeal of that.
I think what you're describing is the template, the golden ratio of baseball. It's what the Dodgers have been doing. They've just been so good at folding these prospects in at the same time that they're making these trades and they're doing these deals. Will Smith is basically subsidizing Mookie Betts' contract. Mm. You know, Walker Buehler is basically, yeah. You know, subsidizing Tyler Anderson to a lesser extent. But you have these players, these young players who are underpaid by design, you get a conveyor belt, you get the assembly line going, and they're going to subsidize and allow you to do things like, listen, we know, we're smart enough to know that giving relievers long-term contracts doesn't usually work, but Kenley Jansen, he's our guy, he's going to be around, we can spend money on Kenley Jansen because, look, we're not getting money from Tony Gonsolin, right. Or not paying money to Tony Gonsolin. So that's the template, and you see it with the Astros right now. You mm-hmm. see what they're doing. They just say, we don't need Carlos Correa, we've got Jeremy Pena. And that's always going to be the template. The trick is, as the Giants are finding out, can you get that conveyor belt running? Because it's one thing to point at it and go, yeah, that's how that works. And it's another thing to actually get those players into the lineup or the rotation. And then once you do that, you're golden. But it's like, you know, the underwear pants gnome or the underwear gnomes where you've got the question marks for step two. They got to do that. And I don't think the Yankees have proven they can do that quite yet. Well, the Dodgers, I would be a little bit more optimistic
about. Yeah, that's the question with the Yankees. They got to prove their conveyor belt works. Or they got to mm-hmm. trade their guys, mm-hmm. right? Like you got, because they have for, you know, all right, everyone go like this, earmuffs. They have assets, right, in the younger players. They need to figure out if they're going to play for the Yankees or they're going to play elsewhere, right? And you can only scout that so much at the non-major league level, you know, so Peraza, Cabrera, you know, Volpe, Dominguez, all these guys coming, like, you know, you got to figure out if the conveyor belt works. And maybe
like I would take that to like the level up beyond just those kids, but like when you know, Grant, I love the way you phrase that, the guys who are subsidizing the other players with the bigger contracts. Gleyber Torres needs to be doing that. Gleyber Torres at one point was doing that. Yeah. Not so much anymore. And so when you talk about the conveyor belt, right? The Yankees had young players that they were leaning on. They actually did this. The 2017 team that took the Astros to the brink, right? The Baby Bombers, all that group. Well, what has happened to that conveyor belt? Like, that group hasn't achieved very much except for Aaron Judge, right? Like, I mean, a lot of those guys aren't even playing for the Yankees anymore. And so, yeah, I think that is an open question in New York is, does this quote-unquote conveyor belt work, right? And then, look, Gleyber Torres had a lot of success coming up earlier on, and, like, it sort of faded away, had a hard time adjusting at shortstop, hasn't been the same offensive player. So it's not just getting them there, but also maintaining that level of performance, right?
And
the Yankees have a lot to prove there.
And development comes at you quickly, because last year when you sort of heard the whispers of Juan Soto might get traded, and you're thinking, no. Well, what if he could get traded? What if the Nationals were wacky enough to trade Juan Soto? Who would have the prospects to get that haul? Well, last offseason, it was the Giants. The Giants, they had a deep farm system. They had all these first-round picks. They had Luis Matos was this guy. And then 4 months later, they could not compete for Juan Soto because the farm system came at them fast. They're still waiting for that conveyor belt. And that's a big reason why they're having to go out and go, okay, Aaron Judge doesn't want to come now. It's Carlos Correa. Like, they're in that position now. They don't want to be. They want to be where the Dodgers or the Yankees, where you're saying they might go, where it's like, hey, let's fold these guys in and let's, you know, build around the edges and we'll be fine. That's where the Giants want to be. They're just not right now.
But they could sign Aaron Judge.
I think they could. I think that they won't. And I think that their fan base really thinks they will. And so it's going to be.
Oh, that's a good. That's always a great paradigm.
Yeah, it's going to be opening the package under the tree. And it's Mitch Haniger. Mitch Haniger.
Yay, Mitch Haniger. Hey, Grant, I'm feeling a little homesick. What's the discourse on KNBR about this right now? What's and Moraga got for us?
It's just Judge. It's just Judge.
Yeah.
I wrote a column about I think the Giants should sign Cody Bellinger just to be.
Oh, I bet you that. Like, I bet you people love that.
Loved it.
They hated that. And what? My argument is that he's just like Kevin Kiermaier. Like, just expect Kevin Kiermaier.
Sure.
And if he hits 30 home runs, look at the genius. Look at your big genius, Braden Poulsen. But I just think it makes a lot of sense. But yeah, people hate it. The mood on KNBR is just when announce Judge. It's like the people, the reply guys under Rosenthal. Hey, announce Judge. Ken, we talk Judge to the Mets. You know, like, that's all. It's just Judge to the Giants. That's it.
Man, I miss KNBR at times like this. Boy, I do.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. You don't get that many opportunities to upgrade your organization through a terrific hire. LinkedIn Jobs helps you to nail those chances. We've all searched for a job at some point in our lives, and chances are, if you're like me, you've used LinkedIn as a resource to network and follow the trends in your industry. You've spent a lot of time on LinkedIn, so why wouldn't you make that the place to post your job? LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to a perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. LinkedIn knows that small businesses are wearing so many hats and might not have the time or resources to hire. LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make that process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/MLB show. That's linkedin.com/MLB show to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
I've got them signing a shortstop. I think they're going to get one of the shortstops.
Ooh.
Right? You know, I the more I look into it, and I agree, they have so much – so many defensive holes to patch. Mm-hmm. And the one that they don't is shortstop right now. And so if you have a guy like Trey Turner, you can put it second for a year if he's willing to do that. That makes a ton of sense to me. If you are getting Carlos Correa and then you're saying Brandon Crawford, you are now a super utility guy at third and short, I agree that that could make the Giants better, obviously, but I'm not sure if all of a sudden now you have the defense is still a little porous and Carlos Correa isn't like that much of a Mike Trout stud as far as, you know, he's got 800 plus OPS every year, but not a 900 plus, not a 1,000 plus. So I don't know. That's where I go.
Do you know Carlos Correa in a platinum glove?
I do. I mentioned it maybe 5 times in a recent article, maybe 6.
Why?
I just give platinum. Platinum.
Hey, so did Jose Trevino.
Hey, now.
Hey, now. Okay, those two shortstops, without looking at the numbers at all, right? Like, I mean, is one better than the other in your mind? Like, when you're talking about the Giants, I mean, you're talking about fits. Like, you looked at it as fits, but, like, just all things being equal, right? Like, you know, do you like one of those players better than the other?
I think just in general for almost any team, I kind of like Turner a little bit more just because of the new rules and the pickoff throws being limited. He's already stealing bases at a wacky rate. He's got that 99th percentile sprint speed. I think I like him as he's a fun player. I think Correa is a really, really, really good player, talented player, but he's more of like a sum of the parts kind of player where he does everything well. He's not standing out. I think he's never hit 30 home runs. He's not hitting 350s. You know, he's doing everything really well, but Turner's like a guy you can point to and just go like, wow, every so often in a different way. But Correa's the better fielder. So if you want shortstop defense, I don't know if you guys know this, but Correa won a platinum glove. That's one above gold.
I am so biased by when I actually watch them play. And I tend to watch Trey Turner mostly in October. I'm Correa all day, every day. Turner's great. He does a lot of things really well. But the Giants, we're not just talking about fit for a baseball team, right? You're talking about like face of the franchise. You're talking about like what are the Giants moving through this decade, right? And Trey Turner is just not that sort of presence, and that's perfectly fine. He's still a great baseball player who's going to be very well compensated and will make another team good next year, but he is not a guy you're going to put on billboards, right? And for me, of the position player class, like the two guys who fit that sort of both the ability and the presence and the sort of understanding of all that comes with that are Judge and Correa.
Yeah.
See, I just wrote about that, and I don't put Correa in the billboard class. I think it's just Judge and Judge and Judge. And maybe you can extend it to the guys that people have heard of, whether it's Verlander or DeGrom. But for me, the only billboard player is Judge. Correa is a great player, does everything well. But I just don't know if you're going to get Chet and Daly City to buy in to to Carlos Correa as easily as it is for Judge.
Well, no, I mean, it's certainly a tougher sell. I mean, one guy just broke the American League record for home runs, which was a record we all knew and thought about before this year. and talked about very often. And the other guy is like a 5-6 win shortstop who, you know, happens to be connected to the worst cheating scandal in, you know, in the past 100 years. But Correa, I think, is I probably would bet on him over the next 10 years over Judge. I don't know if I'd bet on him more next year, but over the next 5, yeah, definitely. He's younger.
So
he plays a more important defensive position, and he plays it better. And he's been consistently a really good hitter. The injuries kind of are what they are. He's gotten banged up. And I think that it is the way he conducted himself in sort of taking on a leadership role in the wake of the sign-stealing scandal at a time when Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, George Springer clearly did not want to be the face of that. Correa's willingness to sort of take the brunt of it, it doesn't excuse his involvement in the scandal, but the way he essentially was just like, I will be the point man for this, I think bodes well for his sort of standing in clubhouse is moving forward. Maybe I'm overstating that, but I do think that there were people in the game who looked at that and at least weren't put off by it per se. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know.
I mean,
do we still get yelled at for like saying anything besides they should have? I don't. Whatever. Twitter's dead, so it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter anyway. Like, look, I that's a great point about Correa's, like, you know, presence, I think that, and he really did represent himself as well as he could. He wore it, yeah. right? Like he stood up there and he wore it.
Yeah.
But I would pick him for another reason. And you hinted at it a little bit, Andy, about who you'd bet on in the next 5 years or 10 years. I think Carlos Correa is so smart, knows his game so well that when things start to go south, maybe the body's not the same as it was, his game changes because of it or whatever, I'd bet on that dude figuring out a way to make it work. Mm-hmm. And I think that is, to me, and maybe this goes all into that intangibles bucket, like that front-facing element, that leadership element, but also just the dude's really smart mm-hmm. and understands why he has success. When he talks about his craft, it's something that has always stuck out to me about Carlos Correa. This guy understands why it works mm-hmm. and maybe why it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And that's not universal. I think they all do to a certain extent. Carlos Correa has that. When I listen to him talk, it feels like it's a whole different level. So for me, those are the guys where you're like, okay, 5 years from now, how does this look? Mm-hmm. I'm going to bet on that guy figuring it out.
Right.
And I think that's really impressive. And it says something about him too. Like he's just a really sharp dude.
Right. That's part of why I actually really liked Texas's deal with Marcus Semien is I think Semien is a similar yeah. sort of player, someone who has – and mm-hmm. he obviously like – he didn't have a great year offensively. He was like in the toilet all year. But he finished with an above average like, you know, WRC plus. He was like a 4-win player. You know, he's that's a guy who understands how to manage failure. And I think to your point, it's not that Judge lacks those qualities. He's obviously a very sophisticated hitter, thinker. He's done some things to change, you know, his routine to be more to keep his body more like supple and able to handle the grind. The thing that he has going against him is he's 6'7", 280 pounds.
Right.
And that, as you get older, will become a bigger problem in a way that Correa, while he is oversized for a shortstop, does not have those sort of just the impending limitations of his frame, per se.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like, I mean, look, I mean, we've seen this with Aaron Judge. He's just not on the field, right? Well, he's had parts of his career where he's straight up just not – he can't go.
If you buy his argument, though, that is a result of things that he has changed.
Right. And I do.
And over the last couple years,
I do buy that.
Like, yeah, he's posted.
I mean, this guy, but like, yeah, it's also he's 6'7", he's massive.
Right.
You know, plays hard to his credit. But yeah, he's got all those things too, for sure. Like that guy understands his swing.
Yes.
Right. And he's proven it over and over again. And like Marcus Semien, by the way, Andy, what a great example. His career trajectory shows you that he understands how to handle failure. Yes. Adjust it because he understands his game, right? Like this is a guy that's had, you know, people write him off,
right?
Or like this is not going to happen for him and look at him. So I think that's partly a matter of just like knowing yourself that well. And like, yeah, he's a really intelligent person too, right? Like these are three really sharp people. And I think this is where it plays in baseball. It's like, do you understand why you're having success? Because if you do that, you can make adjustments as things begin to change around you.
All right, this has been episode 33 of The Roundtable. If you're joining us late, I'll catch you up. Andy McCullough described Aaron Judge as supple. That is your hot stove update for today. We will be back at the winter meetings, I think, is our next episode. We're going to be in person, I think, right?
Oh, baby, in the lobby. Love it.
We'll be in the lobby. All the greats will be there.
All the greats.
But this is different because yeah. you can actually like physically lord over me, Andy. Like you could just sit next to me and when I make a stupid point, you can get all like tall and then I'll just go, okay, I'm sorry, sir.
What's your stat line, Grant?
Let's see. I am 5'8", 160.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah. You're in some trouble. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a short king. Short
we're
king,
not. That's not a short. What is short?
See here, when I was growing up, like 5'7" was average, but then the kids with their beef hormones, like we talked about, they shot up. So, I think short is anything under 5'9", I think it's like maybe 5'10". Like that's
I'm short.
Mm. Yeah. I recently described Bryson Stott to some of my friends as not tall, and they were like, "He's 6'2", and I'm like, "That's not tall." Like that's you know. Oof. But I guess maybe that is tall. I don't know. I'm 6'3", so anything shorter than me, you're not tall, dude.
I stood next to Monte Ellis one time, and wee little Monte Ellis, and he was giant, just freaking could pick me up by the head and throw me into the hoop. So
yeah,
it's all a matter of
you should walk around the Yankees clubhouse sometime. Brian Cashman has many things that he likes in players. He likes big boys.
Like always.
He likes big – there's big fellas in that room. I mean
– dude, he had pitchers that looked like that. Dellin Betances.
Aroldis Chapman.
Right? Right. Like they all like
– I would get a lot of DMs from Lindsay Adler about this very topic.
Oh, yeah.
Just like, you know, I was interviewing X today. Oh, my God.
Jameson Taillon is a giant. Just yeah. Big fellas.
Yeah. He likes
it's upsetting to me that Judge and Stanton are generally considered nice people. I would love them to be very angry and have the ass. And then maybe one day in the clubhouse, just, you know, Godzilla King Kong going at it. I don't know.
Well, Grant, you could have covered John Roush like I did.
Oh, did he have the ass?
You know, he was well known for having the ass. I actually found him to be he was one of those guys who was
a prickly sort.
You just understood, like, this guy kind of has the ass and he doesn't like doing this per se, like talking. But like, he was actually very pleasant, you know, like under those constraints. Like
Mike Puma has a story about him. You go up to him as a locker, you're like, John, you got a minute? And he's look up at you regarding.
yeah. That see, like that genre of guy is gone.
Like, I know, I missed that. Those actually. Guys are. Yeah.
You know, those guys are gone. Yeah. It's like,
they are.
And to an extent, like I miss it almost. Right.
They
like,
media trained it out of
yeah. Them. Like they've, you know, because when you could get some of those times you get guys like that talking and they'd be really interesting.
That's
and
right.
They would say stuff that like, you know, they hadn't talked about like, and you'd have story, mm-hmm. You know, like, Tony Cingrani was like that. And I remember one spring training, you know, Ken Gernick had this great story about Tony Cingrani, like living in a van and like climbing Kilimanjaro or something like that. And I was just like, how did you like get like that guy never talks? Like, how'd you do that? You know, and then you I don't know. And now it's just I don't know. I miss the I'm not saying we should be mistreated. I'm not arguing for that. But I do miss before guys got the sort of inherent. You know, media trained out of them per se.
Yes, no, totally. Media trained is exactly what happened. Yeah. And like, you know, it's hard, but like once you break through, it's like you want them to stay that way because you knew that everyone else was going to like stay away from them.
Yeah.
You know, like that. I remember Lucas Duda, who we both covered. Like yeah. Lucas is one of the quietest people, like legitimately super quiet, just very reserved. And I remember being in L.A. and, you know, he's from Southern California and somebody from his hometown paper goes over there to try to talk to him. Mm-hmm. And like, it's going poorly, yeah. Right? Like I'm looking over, it's a minute in and I hear the guy go, boy, you're really going to make me work for this, aren't you? And Lucas, like without even, just like, yep. But then again, like he's a classic example. Like, you know, he wasn't like cranky like Andy's talking, but like he was a quiet guy. But once you broke through that,
yeah,
like he could be super insightful, you know. And I remember, you know, look, Mets fans know this. Like Lucas Duda was in the middle of one of the most infamous plays in team history, right? And I remember it was a rough off season for him in the following spring. Right. This guy who just didn't like to talk, like one day we just had a conversation and he basically laid out what it was like to go through that, like the feelings of like having had a moment like that and wearing it pretty much the entire winter. So it's like a perfect example. Like this is a guy you never think would do that. But then, you know, when you're around enough or whatever, like sometimes they do. And I think that's fun.
Hey, Grant, can you ring the bell?
I got it.
Oh, don't even. Don't you start.
Just ring the bell.
Don't
just
know. If we're going to have a bell for that, we have a bell for every time you mention the Royals.
That's what. No. This is what the bell is for, dummy. If you would listen to the show when you weren't around, Grant came up with a bell that we ring every time I talk about the Royals. And what I was going to say, as the glue guy, what I was going to say is I think actually Hosmer's safe even if he makes a good throw. I really believe that.
Probably.
I really believe that. Probably. I believe that. That's my hot take, is I think he actually right. would have been safe. He was coming in hot. It's not an easy turn. I think he's safe. Maybe that's not. I don't know. If it's a great – with a great throw that he brings him in down here, I think he's out. But with –
Does Grant even know what we're referring to? Like,
so, Grant
– I kind of do, but, like, I had to – I had to write on an index card that the Astros won the 2022 World Series before this podcast. So, like, I'm a little hazy.
Yeah, Grant's brain of his memory of baseball just sort of shuts off after Pablo Sandoval catches the last out of 2014. Sandoval falls on his back, and then Grant's mind just goes black. Just
like the McCovey Cove Instagram.
Yeah, no, it's. I mean, hey, listen, like, I can tell you about when I see Tony Perez Chica, and he is a, I want to say he's a Diamondbacks coach, first base coach, maybe third base coach. I'm not sure, but I see Tony Perez Chica, and I go, oh man, that guy on the Giants, he wasn't so good. Like, that's where my baseball brain is. I'm not watching the baseball on the field. I'm thinking about the coaches because this guy was a random bench player from 1995 or whatever. So that's where I'm at. And that's, I think we all have to find our own path in this life. All right, this has been episode 33. We are way over time. We will be back at the winter meetings. Andy will lord over myself and Mark with his gigantic, intimidating glue guy frame. And we will see you then. Thanks for listening.